I'd like to take a minute to tell you the result of the request that we made here 7 weeks ago concerning the dangerous physical condition of my wife's sister, Moni. 7 weeks in intensive care, and on two occasions it was believed that she would not recover. We're happy to say, however, now that what the doctors call a miracle has occurred. She's improving, and tonight she will be flown to Germany. She will then be in intensive care in German health facilities, probably for a year. The tumor has not had any permanent effect upon her mind or upon her body. And everyone is extremely grateful, and I want to thank you for the good thoughts you sent us. Good thoughts are very important things. And in the talk of this morning, we want to call attention to an old Buddhist philosophy, which perhaps isn't as well known in the West. Buddha told his followers very definitely that this world is a school. It is not a playground. Also, we come to school to learn. And life is a process of learning. No one expects to stay in school forever, nor do they expect to remain in the same grade of a school for a very long time. Life is growth, unfoldment. And we are born into this world largely because of the fact we need growth. We need self-unfoldment. We need to learn the virtues and integrities that are essential to the final destiny of all created things. Therefore, the fact that we may have certain shortcomings and make mistakes along the way, as these circumstances should be accepted for their soul growth powers. They help us to grow. No one in the world can go from the cradle to the grave without making some mistakes. We will always do things that we may regret. We will make mistakes. We will make false decisions. We will come into violent conflicts with other people all the way along through life. Our mistakes are not the problem. It's what we do about them that is the real heart and soul of the subject. Therefore, as we look back upon the occurrences of a confused existence, we must not permit the mind to become associated too intimately with regrets, with self-criticism, or with any attitude which frustrates further and future growth. If we look back over our lives, sometimes we almost wish that we could have a good attack of amnesia and forget the whole thing. It might make us more comfortable at the moment, but it would leave us faced with problems we have not solved. We must not only solve the problems of our environment, we must solve the problems within ourselves. And these inner problems are sometimes the most painful of all. Let us imagine for a moment that we look back over the years of life and we pick out three or four conditions for which we were responsible, or for which we think we were responsible, and have gotten into difficulties that simply cannot be easily erased from the memory. As long as the person has a mind and a memory, it will continue to function. We must live with our memories just as we live with every other circumstance of living. Therefore, the problem is not how can we forget, but rather how we can capitalize on the liabilities in our own past. We have to find out what these things mean. Once we get the meaning, we then can more or less nullify the exact memory itself. We can look back upon a situation and we say it was very difficult, but it has brought about a deeper understanding of life. It has given us values, and these values must also be remembered. If we remember only the mistake and do nothing to think about our own reactions to these situations, we can become extremely neurotic. There are tragedies which for many persons are greater than they can bear. There seems to be no possible hope of changing patterns that were set many years ago and which have more or less overshadowed our lives from that time on. To work with this, we must, to a sense at least, become religion-oriented, philosophy-oriented, and psychology-oriented. We have to begin the process of untangling the circumstances which have hurt and offended us. One of the ways, of course, in which some psychologists operate is to make us continually think about these problems until we can no longer energize them. But this process is sometimes attended by unusual dangers. It is much better to approach our own past in a more or less scientific manner and try to discover ways of working through a situation. Going back to when it occurred, for example, we should estimate ourselves 15, 20, 50 years after we have made the mistake, we are no longer the same person. Life has changed us. Life has brought us new enlightenments, new opportunities, new relationships. And therefore, we are today a new person. The person that made the mistake is no longer alive. The person who made the mistake has gradually been transformed into a better person. If we were not better persons, we would not regret the mistake. Having found that we are now a new person, we can begin to understand what we were when the incident occurs. We must not isolate the circumstance itself. We must not take the attitude that today we would make the same mistake that we made then. The fact that we regret, that we wished we could change the situation, proves that we have grown. And from the position of a new growth, we ought to be able to understand the person of long ago who did not have that growth. Thus, we cannot take our present condition and say that is how we should have acted many years previously. We are new people. We have new insights. We have better understanding. Therefore, we must consider for a moment the understanding that existed when we made the mistake. We have to realize the circumstances in our own thinking and our own emotions. Very often, the mistakes that we regret were made in our younger years. Most of the mistakes that have come to me for solution have occurred in lives before they had reached their 30th year. Perhaps an early broken home. Perhaps a failure of moral incentives and directives way back when we were young. We must judge, then, the entire problem in the view of what we were when it happened. If we were unexperienced, if we were without proper guidance at that time, if we were brought up in an environment which was adverse to our best interests, we have to realize that those were the factors and circumstances that made the mistake. We were just not as grown up as we have become since. When we weigh the possibility of putting ourselves back to that other time we must not include the decisions we would make today. We must not expect that we had the ability, the skill, the experience, and the integrity to make decisions which we can make now after perhaps half a lifetime of careful thinking and new opportunities for learning and self-analysis. So begin by seeing how responsible you were at the time you made the mistake. If at that time you were young, you were without much strength of background, you were living in a world in which mistakes are the order of the day, and therefore begin to analyze the problems that you faced then in the light of what you were then instead of what you are now. Also, think carefully as to the gradual consequences of the incidents themselves. Did this mistake help you to grow up? Were you a stronger person after you made the mistake? Did you learn something you've never forgotten that was useful? Have you dedicated yourself to making no more actions of that kind or quality? Are you now able to sit down and look at yourself as a separate person, the person who was then in a condition, situation, crisis, emergency, for which you were not equipped? Also, what has the mistake done to you, or what have you done to the mistake? If you have gotten into a difficulty many years ago, you must realize that that difficulty is now no longer a vital reality. In many instances, the very circumstances you regret most are no longer regretted by anyone else except yourself. The circumstances in all these lives have changed, and therefore, the main regret lies in the memory, in the record in your own nature, a record of guilt, a record of deceit, a record of violence. Any one of these and many other situations live on only in you. You may, however, also be faced with another circumstance. Looking back, you may realize that the mistake you made damaged innocent people. This is always one of the most difficult things to face. But the damage was done, and you do not know for certain but that those persons so damaged also received an important lesson, which perhaps they were years in growing up to. The mistakes that we make, therefore, have to be regarded as part of an unfolding growth pattern. We regret many things historically. Nations regret. Races regret. Individuals regret. But out of these regrets, ultimately, there is a powerful experience of soul consciousness. That you can regret, that you can be sorry, proves that a higher degree of unfoldment is gradually taking place within yourself. Taking these shadows of past things, you must gradually impersonalize them. You must face the simple fact that you cannot change what has happened. Therefore, if it is a liability, you have to some way transform it into an asset in your own consciousness. You must learn from what happened. Now, in most religious systems, there is what is called penance, a process of repenting, or a process of exhausting the evil of a situation by sincere and practical regret. Therefore, the possibility of penance arises wherever difficult situations arise. It may well be that you can reconcile or correct the situation itself if it has not endured too long. But if this is no longer possible, then you have to consider a new way of exhausting responsibility. If you find that you cannot correct the condition at its source any longer, then your problem is to perform a penance. Now, this penance is usually a good deed, something constructive, something valuable, something important, an experience which you dedicate to the memory of your past mistake. In other words, supposing when you were working along that you were not too thoughtful of your children. And then as a result of that, they were alienated, and you feel that their futures were damaged in some way. If you can no longer have any influence on this situation, if you cannot correct it in itself, if you cannot change the lives that grew up under the influence of your mistake, then you have the penance problem. And that is to perform an action equivalent in every way that you can possibly work it out, by which you perform a good deed for someone who is here now, that you perform in the memory of your personal mistake in the past a very generous and unselfish action as a form of penance. This type of action is often very valuable. I know that a person came to me who regretted deeply that they had neglected their parents. It became quite a fixation in the mind of this person. They realized that they had failed in the duty of a child to a parent. The parents are now long gone. There's nothing they can do about that. But they can take into their lives and hearts some person, a neglected parent, and be a good friend to them. Try to give to someone else the love that you failed to give long ago to a person in your life. Try to find a way to make amends and dedicate this amendment to the memory of the person you have previously wronged and neglected. Penance is important inasmuch as it has a tendency to pay a debt. It makes it possible to fulfill in another generation an act of kindness that you failed to commit at some previous time. All of this type of situation has a very therapeutic effect, namely that you have to find some way of atonement. And that atonement is to do or perform an act that will compensate for the mistake that was made. This is something that we can all do if we really want to seriously enough. Another phase of this problem is the effect of these destructive memories upon our present associations. A family in which one person is linked tightly to an old grief or an old tragedy suffers on and on because that person is no longer able to function in a happy, normal, proper way today. Therefore, old memories can very often damage people who are in no way involved in them, but simply suffer from your repentance. Under such conditions, personal thoughtfulness comes into focus. If we are sorry we damaged someone long ago, we cannot help this today. But if we continue to damage people because of our previous circumstance, then we are perpetuating a situation that should not exist. In other words, we should not take out upon the living the experiences that we bring forward from unhappy early factors or circumstances. If, therefore, your gloom, your psychic self-destruction syndrome is continuing to function, to burden a new home, to burden children today, to incapacitate the individual for social adjustments. This is simply perpetuating a condition which exists only in our own minds. Somewhere along the line, nearly everyone has to do a mental and emotional house cleaning job. They have to put their houses of memory in order, or else they will be burdened with spooks and ghosts that will wander the ramparts of their minds like the ghost of Hamlet's father wandered on the ramparts of Elsinore. With the ghosts are the problems. The ghosts are the things that just do not die. They are what is left when the circumstance itself no longer exists. We have to be very careful and thoughtful about ghosts. They can do us constant and continuing damage. So if we are suffering from ghostly memories that haunt us, if we are suffering from remembrances that we cannot live out or cannot get over, then we have to go to work today and immediately upon our own inner lives, our own natures. There is no use seeking for escape mechanisms, or for that matter, of defense mechanisms. One of the most common defense mechanisms is the individual trying to prove to himself that someone else was to blame for the mistake he made. He may not believe it, but he still tries to prove it. He still tries to rationalize his previous action to vindicate himself. This is seldom very helpful, because it represents an attempt to evade a head-on factual relationship with the inner life that we possess. An escape mechanism may often follow as other persons who will try by artificial means to forget. There are many cases, for instance, of alcoholism and narcotic addictions. There are many cases in which tranquilizers and various pacifying and hypnotic drugs are used to help the individual to get over an intense melancholia or something of this nature. All of these are useless. They have no way of touching the fact. The moment we sober up, the memory is still there. And therefore, this attempt to escape by scientific or medical escape mechanisms generally does no permanent good. We have to head into the situation itself. We have to find ways in which we can make right any wrong that is still within our capacity to correct. Incidentally, in remembering all of the past disasters that afflict us and worry us, we have a tendency to gradually submerge the better things of life. We become so attached to this gloom that many marvelous experiences, many wonderful opportunities to grow and become enriched, are either overlooked or ignored. We continue to think only of the particular problem that we faced at the moment. In one case that I know, a family had a young son. The young man was delicate, not very healthy, and rather timid, and not at all aggressive. The parents considered it merely to be a character defect, until one day the young man keeled over, and it was diagnosed as infantile diabetes. The young man died. The parents never recovered from the shock because they felt the guilt of not having recognized the true circumstances. They should have done this, they should have done that. They should not have been so critical. They should not have blamed the young man for being lazy or being tired because he was sick. All of this lingered on as a very sad memory. It was something that actually these persons did not commit this act from any intent to be unloyal or to neglect the boy. It was simply a case that they did not know. But they blamed themselves for not trying harder to find out. Now, this type of blame bothered and worried and depressed the family for a number of years, until a distant relative who they had very little contact with passed on suddenly and left a child with almost the same age as the boy who passed away. The family took this child and turned their attention to giving it every thought, care, and love and sincere interest that they were no longer able to give to their own boy. This was the best type of atonement. This was the best type of penance. And it gradually not only helped to heal the wound, but conforming with the natural impulses of affection, they gradually helped to guide this other child into a useful and practical career. So here was an example of making right a wrong in the only way it could be corrected. If they had gone on through life blaming themselves to the end, they would have been in serious difficulties. As it happens, they did, to a measure, blame themselves to the end. They never forgot. But the sting was removed. The tremendous pressure was taken up by concentrating attention upon another person who was in great need of their help and understanding. These are ways in which we perform penances for misdeeds or mistakes of the past. And there are a great many cases of reclamation in these areas. The individual, having become aware of a guilt mechanism, immediately turns to some constructive way of solving the problem. And this is what we nearly always have to do where we have some kind of a negative memory situation. Another important problem in this is, of course, that memory is most dangerous to the isolated. The individual living alone retires still further into themselves. Memory is also most dangerous at night, where sleeplessness may contribute to a long memory pattern repeated many, many times. Therefore, where memory is hard to control, new things to remember must be brought into focus. The individual must develop a larger area of personal interest. They must not have the time to continue to remember their previous mistakes. Instead of that, they should be preparing for future victories, which are in a way related to the mistakes, because from the mistakes came the impulse to do something better, to try to advance a cause that would make life useful and give them a sense of victory over previous faults or shortcomings. Therefore, wherever a person has a nostalgia on some part of their own career, they should try very desperately to keep active, constructively active, taking an interest in matters which are for the common good, and to get over a personal injury or sorrow as a result of an impersonal service to some larger field of activity. If the person who has a tendency to psychic self-reproach can begin to build things they are proud of, can suddenly realize that they can be useful and can do things well to take the places of the mistakes they made, this often results in a very favorable change in their general psychic outlook. Nearly all people who are heavily conscience-ridden are, to a measure, religious people. They are therefore the ones who reproach themselves the most because they believe they have violated the morals and integrities of their faith. they see themselves as backsliders, as fallen souls, who have failed to keep faith with truth. It should be remembered, however, that a thoughtful reading of the New Testament tells us beyond any doubt in the world that the entire theory of religion is a theory of redemption, that it is not part of the plan of God or the Christian faith or any other faith that an individual should destroy himself as a result of mistakes that he has made. It is also pointed out that in the theory of redemption, it is part of the Christian doctrine that Christ becomes the personification of the redeeming power in nature, the power that dies for the sin of the world. And this proves, in a certain way, at least, to the religious, that sin is forgivable, that sin is something that is overcome by virtue of the divine spirit and the divine principle that abides within us. Therefore, it is useful for us to call upon the forgiving power of God in ourselves when we are mentally or emotionally disturbed by our own mistakes. Now, there are various kinds of mistakes that we have to think about. Some are due to ulterior motives. These are very largely mistakes for which we are responsible. But on the other hand, ulterior motives to a person growing up in our world, these ulterior motives have become so standardized, so generally accepted, so almost inevitable, that the individual is frequently moved to an unfortunate relationship by the pressure of self-survival or the advancement of a personal career. This type of self-centeredness may lie behind a great many of the most unfortunate situations that can arise in our careers. If we look back and realize that basically our problem was selfishness, that we were interested only in our own well-being, that we sacrificed others to the advancement of our own purposes, and that we were, in some instances, actually dishonest in order to advance our careers. If we look back and find these types of problems in the background of things, then we should make every possible effort to establish a higher standard of integrity now. Where we fail to do this and continue to nurse the attitudes that long ago caused us to do things we repent, we will just do more things to repent until life becomes too complicated and our own mistakes begin to catch up with us. Also, it is very important in generally thinking about self-censure to make sure that self-censure is justified. Now, in most cases, it probably easy to make a case that it is justified. But there are forms of self-censure that arise from circumstances beyond our control. They arise also from mistakes which are almost natural to us. A case in point on this is a family in which the parents refuse to permit a child to marry a member of a different religion. The parents were perfectly sincere in this, yet they made a desperate mistake and ruined the child's life. And there was never from that time much beside melancholia in the child. Heartbroken, they lost the one opportunity that they believed would have brought them a happy life. Now, these parents were not evil. They were not individuals who wanted to hurt the child. They were people, however, who were so dominated by a religious point of view, by the particular faith or sect or creed to which they belonged, that they began to think in terms that to marry outside of that faith was a mortal sin. And they were trying to save the child from sin. The whole situation was typically the intensity of devotion to what these parents believe to be the truth. Now, we can bring this type of thinking right on down to the present time. We realize that in many instances, sectarianism is contrary to the actual teachings of Christ. Sectarianism certainly does not recognize the words of the Master when he said, "Other sheep have I which are not of this fold." The obedience to the sectarian limitations can lead not only to desperate situations in personal and home life, but this definite, desperate, fanatical limitation of attitude is responsible for some of the worst wars in history. No one meant to be wrong. Now, if you have to look back on this situation, and you say to yourself simply that you did the best you knew, the best you believed, that actually it was a heartbreak for you even at the time to do what you did, but you felt it a moral, spiritual obligation. On the situations of this kind, you can only look back and regret the attitude or the circumstance. But from the point of view of when it occurred, you were not committing an evil action as far as you knew. You were only true to some principle that you believe in. It may be that 50 years later you don't believe in that principle quite that way anymore. Perhaps if you had it to do over again, you would tell the child to go and marry the person they cared for and give your blessing. But the reason for your present attitude is very largely motored by your reflections upon the previous incident. From a perspective of years, you realize the damage. But at the moment, you were trying to do what was right. Now, this applies to a great many situations in which individuals try to do what is right. But one of the mistakes that is most commonly made is that we really are trying to get someone else to do what we believe to be right. Instead of using rightness to integrate our own inner lives, we attempt to spread it over other people's experiences. This can cause a lot of trouble. The individual faced with decisions must always take a little time for thoughtfulness. They should count 10 and very slowly in order to decide what course to take. They have to be able to ponder, meditate, and consider before they commit a very definite action influencing other people. There are a great many parents, for instance, who decide what the children's loyalties ought to be. The parents may decide that the child's loyalty should be to them as parents, that the child should always obey them, that the child should always be available to take care of them, that the child should make all the necessary adjustments to meet the demands of their elders. This often leads to a serious break in the family relationships. The children simply leave home. The parents are crushed because instead of taking care of the controlling and disciplining of their own lives, they tried to transfer this responsibility to the life of another person. This almost always ends in trouble. One of the classic experiences in this field, of course, is the story of Santa Monica. The wonderful person whose experiences resulted in canonization. She was a Christian woman married to a non-Christian, a pagan. She tried to convert him because it was a moral responsibility to convert him. But he didn't convert. He remained for many years very much in his own way of thinking. Then, for the virtue for which she was later canonized,
Santa Monica decided that that was not the way. Instead of trying to change his religion, it was wiser, better, and more proper that she should so live her own religion that he would see it in action. And as a result of thereby being a very beautiful, gentle, kindly soul, exemplifying all of the best qualities of her religion as she believed it and understood it, she lived to see her husband converted. Not by nagging him, not by fussing him, not by scolding him, but by proving the value of her own faith. Now, this is the type of thing that people don't generally do much about. They decide what someone else should believe, and then they expect them to believe it. And the very faith which they are trying to sell may have brought practically no happiness or peace to the persons themselves. This is a very common cause of long-seated tragedy. I know one case in which a conversion program of this kind between two people who were otherwise admirably suited to each other continued without a let-up for over 40 years. Both persons stood their ground to the bitter end, and the situation was solved only by death. Now, this type of thing results in great misery. Both of the persons in these cases, in this particular case, both were neurotics, hopelessly involved, desperately dominated by this sense that it was their moral duty to change someone else. If most of the problems of your life have been the result of trying to change other people, then perhaps it is timely to think about putting yourself in order. If you want someone to live better than they are living, give them an example. Do it yourself. Now, it may not do any particular good. Maybe they won't see it even after that. But at least you will then have lived your own belief sincerely and fully and non-competitively. If we believe in one God, we cannot factually and honestly believe that in this great world in which we live, all sincere members of all faiths do not enjoy the same divine protection. Now, prejudices of one kind or another also play an important part in disagreements and in sorrows and misfortunes. Imagination, perhaps, is even more important than prejudice. Some of the worst problems we have are imaginary. And in various domestic relationships and family situations, we have to be careful that we do not create the situation that we later find impossible. Imagination can bring doubt, fear, anxiety. It can cause the individual to be jealous and envious. It can break a home through gossip. All kinds of tragedies arise from the individual who is not able to face situations, but takes them into their inner lives, moods and broods, imagining the worst. If you imagine the worst long enough, it will happen, but not perhaps in the ways you have expected. So wherever negative imaginations result in circumstantial patterns which may seem unreasonable or unfair,